Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, July 11th, 2022. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and we will be placing the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com under the Accessibility Advisory Committee page. Just a few helpful tips. For people joining via phone call, you can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go under reaction, you can click on the hand raise icon that will raise or lower your virtual hand. By using these tools, it indicates that an individual is intending to speak and we can have one speaker at a time. As you know, we do have ASL interpreters with us on this meeting. It helps them when speakers state their name before speaking. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at the time. So in advance, thank you for stating your name when you begin speaking. We do have some guest speakers today. And as a friendly reminder, if you would, when you're using your visual presentation, please describe it in detail for the convenience of our members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision. As a reminder, any members of the public who would like to make public comments can do so during the public comment section. You can either send me a chat message to inform me that you would like to speak, and I can put you on the list, or when we begin that section, you can raise your hands virtually and we will take the speakers in the order received. All the speakers would have 3 minutes to speak. I would try to alert you approximately 30 seconds in advance that your time is going to end. And at the end of 3 minutes, you would hear a sound alerting you that your time has ended. We practice this to make sure that anybody who would like to make comments gets an opportunity to do so. If we have any remaining time, and if any speaker, any member of the public, or even a member of the AAC has any additional comments, we can surely come back to you. Chair Calabia, at this point, I can read the agenda. Please. Afterwards, I can take the roll call.
Please do.
Okay, thank you. Today's meeting agenda is as follows. After I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. At 4:05, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approval of today's meeting agenda, as well as prior meeting minutes. At 4:10, we have Megan Kennedy, Johannes Benehoff, Kevin Harrison, John Finnerty, Chidera Uday to give us an update from the District Department of Transportation about the floating bus stops. At 4:40, we will have a next topic, which is blue and yellow line projects. And we have a team within VMATA to speak about that. Kelly Stoll, Tatiana Kotrikova, and Jamisha Peterson. At 5:10, we have our next topic about East Falls Church bus loop extension and Franconia Springfield bus bays. Jim Hamry and Catherine Jones will speak about that. At 5:30, the committee will discuss their work plan on the bus and rail subcommittee. At 5:45, the public comment section will begin. At 6 p.m., the meeting will adjourn. This concludes the meeting agenda for today's bus and rail subcommittee meeting. Now I will go through the roll call. When I call your name, please confirm your presence. Azhar Atura. Darnis Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy. Rico is on the call with us. Tawan Farmer. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
I'm here.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandra Newsom.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Here.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelford. Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Simonow. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's bus and rail subcommittee meeting. At this point, Chair Calabia, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Motion to accept the agenda.
So move.
Thank you. Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved. I'd like to delay the review of the minutes till later, since we have a full agenda. We have some great presentations coming up. And if you don't mind, Megan, can you start now?
Yes, we're ready to go. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
We can.
Okay. Let me say that before we all join together, I spoke with a transit expert who is a regular viewer of our meetings, John Federico in Tempe. And I told him that he didn't see the attachments you sent, but I had to tell him that they were the best attachments I've seen in preparation for our meeting. Not only were the pictures great, but the fact that you had a video, brief as it was, you still had a video. So Megan and your team, I really was impressed and am impressed, and I thank you for what you've done. We do have members who are blind, so you'll have to kind of do it over for verbally for them. But thanks again. Megan, it's all yours.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much, Tina. I appreciate the feedback and really appreciate the responsiveness of this committee and the information that you provided to us at our last meeting when we came and presented in January, because we took it to heart and have tried to incorporate it into our work going forward. So looking forward to hearing more more comments and feedback today. I'm going to share my screen and let me know if you're able to
yes.
See the slides. Okay, great.
I can't see it.
So, so today we're going to talk again about bike lanes and bus boarding areas. We're going to provide an update on what we provided to you all back in January. The next slide has an agenda. We're going to talk about, we're going to provide an introduction, talk about education and outreach, talk about performance evaluation for the locations where we will be looking to install these types of facilities, and then provide updates on projects that include shared stops or bus islands. And the image on the right is of a woman getting on the 80 bus on H Street Northwest. So the next slide says introduction, and it's just a summary here of where we're at. So DDOT last presented to the WMATA AAC Bus and Rail Subcommittee on January 10th. We're looking to get feedback at that time on the Minnesota Avenue Southeast and Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast projects. We're going to provide an update on those projects today, which are outlined in yellow on the map to the right. The map to the right shows the bus priority corridors in the district. And where we have existing bus lanes and the Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast and Minnesota Avenue Southeast project boundaries are outlined. Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast is from 2nd to Barney Circle, although construction is starting just on the 2nd to 13th Street this year section. And then Minnesota Avenue is Pennsylvania Avenue to East Capitol Street. We also, at that meeting in January, heard the importance of education, outreach, and performance monitoring for locations where we're proposing these bus stop islands and shared bus stops. So you'll hear more about our plans for those today for your feedback. And we are also have been in touch with peer cities to learn about how they're handling these and you know, what we can learn from their experience. So the next slide talks about bus islands and shared stops. Just a refresher for everyone that when we're building protected bike lanes, DDOT and other peer cities are installing bus islands and shared bus stops at bus stops. And they help to reduce the conflict between drivers and bicyclists. They are ADA compliant and supported by NACTO design guidelines. We have an example here on the right of a bus island on 14th Street Northwest, and a bus has pulled up to that bus stop. And bus islands are defined by having the bike lane running behind the bus boarding area. So bus passengers cross the bike lane and wait for the bus on the island. And so you can see that in the image on the right, there's a space for the bike lane in between the sidewalk and the bus island, which has a railing along the side of it closest to the bike lane. The shelter in this case and the bus stop flag are on the island. The shared stop, and I should note, the bus islands require at least 13 feet of width. So we don't always have space for them, but that would be our first choice. The shared stops are where the bike lane and the bus boarding area, share space. And we have an example on the right of a shared stop on M Street Northwest. The bus passengers wait on the sidewalk and they cross the bike lane to board the bus. So in the example on the right, we have the bike lane rises up to the sidewalk grade at the stop area, and it is flush then with the curb. So that passengers can walk or roll across the bike lane to get to the bus stop. And the flag is on the kind of like strip of sidewalk space that is created towards the center of the roadway from the bike lane, which is some space for passengers to step off of the bus before they encounter the green bike lane. This is used in locations where we have less than 13 feet of width, so more constrained locations. And we are participating in a regional working group to standardize these designs across the region that WMATA is also participating in. And I believe we have representatives on the call from that group. So how do they benefit bus riders? How do bus islands and shared stops benefit bus riders? So they extend the curb and sidewalk space out towards a travel lane, and this allows buses to make in-lane stops and reduce illegal parking and loading in bus stop zones. So this is a familiar sight, I think, or issue for many bus riders, where you have vehicles illegally parking and loading in bus stop zones, and so then the bus cannot fully pull to the curb. And this is particularly problematic for users with wheelchairs or other mobility devices. The example on the right is an image of from H Street Northwest near the Chinatown Arch. And you can see where the passenger in the mobility device cannot get on the bus because the bus is not pulled to the curb and the ramp is not extended. And that's because someone's illegally loading in the bus stop zone. So by physically blocking out the space of the zone and bringing the bus stop sidewalk space out into the roadway, we've prevented drivers from illegally parking there and preventing and allowing the bus to fully pull up to the curb, which is now extended into the street. This allows for easier boarding. ensuring bus doors are fully aligned with the curb for ADA compliant boarding with or without wheelchair ramp. Less delay, buses do not lose time merging in and out of traffic from the going into like sort of the parking lane. They're just can stay in their lane and continue forward. And there's more sidewalk space, easier to provide seating and shelter without obstructing the through path for pedestrians. I'm trying to go through this a little bit quickly just to make sure we have time for everyone. We have some great slides here. I want to make sure we get to how do bus islands and shared stops make the streets safer is on the next slide. And basically they provide an alternative to mixing zones, which can be problematic. Mixing zones are where the bus stop and bike lane kind of merge together. And there's an example on the right here from Portland, Oregon, where the bus is pulled across the bike lane and stopped in the bike lane while servicing the bus stop. And bicyclists are merging into general traffic in order to go around the bus. It does, however, introduce a conflict between bus riders and cyclists having the shared bus stops and bus islands. And that's what we want to make sure that we're making it as safe as possible for everyone to get to the bus stop and to travel on their bikes through this bus stop area. So this is why we are working on engineering solutions. So we have here the four E's of safe infrastructure. You'll hear some updates about how we're designing these facilities. So that's the E for engineering. We're going to talk here today also about education. So that's the next E here in this graphic. So how are we educating cyclists? How are we educating bus riders? How are we educating general users in the area to make sure that they are using the facilities in a safe way? We also have enforcement. That is something that we, on all of our projects, work on, making sure that everybody is following the laws and doing so in a safe manner, so coordinating with our enforcement partners. And then here we have evaluation is the next E, and that is also something you'll hear here today. It's because in many cases, these are new installations, so how are we making sure that we're monitoring them, making improvements where needed, hearing from riders, hearing from pedestrians, hearing from bicyclists about how we can make it better and continue to improve the facilities. For the next slide, which is education and outreach, I'm gonna pass it over to Chidera, who is leading this effort for us, and she's gonna walk you through the content of this slide.
Hey, hi everyone, I'm Chidera. So DDoT's bus priority team, we developed a postcard and poster and video to help demonstrate cyclists, bus riders, and pedestrians how to safely use the different type of bus stops that Megan explained. So on the right, we have pictured the postcard, and it's split between two sides showing the different interactions between the bus stop island and the shared bus stop. And it's like an animated graphic in a bird's eye view. And so it just explains that cyclists should slow down and cycle through and stop while passengers are crossing, and an arrow pointing down to where the cyclist should stop. And then it also explains where passengers should safely wait on the bus stop island. And on the shared bus stop side, it also shows where cyclists should slow down and stop while passengers are boarding. And it also points to where passengers should wait, where the bus comes, and to check for cyclists before boarding. And that's on the shared stop side, which is a little bit different because the waiting is on the sidewalk, or boarding is on the sidewalk. So our outreach strategies for the postcards is to distribute them to cyclists and transit riders at different bus stop locations and community events. We also plan to blow up the postcard to 11 by 17 to hang posters at the shared bus stop locations. And there's also a video linked to the bottom left-hand corner, which you can scan the QR code for more detailed instructions on how to safely navigate these bus stops. And the additional strategies that we have that are in progress, we're coordinating with the Department of Disability Services to provide one-on-one training and education for people that need it. And also we're coordinating with WMATA to provide automated bus announcements at bus stops for riders.
For this slide, I'll pass it over to John.
All right, thanks, Megan. Hi, everyone. My name is John Finnerty. I'm a new transportation planner with DDOT. I started back in January. So this slide is titled Performance Evaluation, and we have some bullet text on the left of the screen. And on the right of the screen, we have a picture taken from the sidewalk looking westward at a shared stop location at K Street and First Street Northwest. So, in addition to the education efforts that Chidera just described, I'll be working on performance evaluation efforts at some of the new locations where we're installing these treatments. The evaluation strategies are kind of twofold. They include field observations as well as the distribution of a survey. The field observations will be done at peak hour at some of the existing and future treatment installations. And the goal with the field observations is to quantify the kind of range and frequency of the behaviors at the shared stops and stop islands. So we want to know, are cyclists yielding to transit riders when they're passing through these facilities? How often are these interactions occurring? Are transit riders waiting in the correct locations? All that information, as well as, anything else notable that we see out there. And that covers the field observations. For the user surveys, once we complete our new installations of the shared stops and stop islands on Minnesota Avenue Southeast and Pennsylvania Southeast, DDOT staff will be going out to those locations and engaging with transit users and administering a survey there. And the survey will just kind of ask, do you feel safe at these stops? Is the stop legible? Is it easy to understand where to wait? Who needs to yield? Is it understood that cyclists need to yield at these locations? All of that information, as well as some open-ended questions where transit riders can have the opportunity to give, open-ended feedback about these stops. So hopefully with the field observations and the surveys, we can get a good idea of how these installations are performing and, what lessons we can learn for future treatments or improvements to the existing treatments.
John, can I ask one question?
Of course.
As long as the picture is up, I can see a biker on
yes.
the... is it possible that the biker disregarded the fact that the bus has come to the stop and has passengers who are exiting, or perhaps he got there first?
Yes, so it's hard for me to remember this specific instance, but what I can speak to when I've been out at these locations so far, cyclists, so we would like to see cyclists stop prior to while they're approaching the island and wait for all the stop servicing to be completed, so all the passengers to board or alight. What I've been seeing so far is they generally slow down significantly, but do still board the island and kind of just slowly work around the stop. So, they are yielding. It's not like they're completely disregarding the transit users, but they aren't generally stopping before approaching the island, the shared stop.
Megan mentioned that of the four E's, there was enforcement, but I noticed that there was no text about enforcement, no discussion about enforcement. Will you all be dealing with that? Enforcement, I think, is essential, really, if you add another E. Enforcement, you know, if that biker didn't slow down at the right time, how can we get such unruly bikers to follow what is expected of them in this thing?
Yeah, you know, regarding that question, Tina, I think that's really important. You know, we will make sure that, you know, MPD is aware of these locations and, you know, the proper etiquette. I may need to also get confirmation from our policy team on exactly the language around the regulations regarding yielding, and then make sure that those enforcement partners have the correct information about the proper enforcement approach there, if that makes sense.
Since Council Member Shea has introduced legislation to allow for Idaho stops, which means virtually that a bicyclist doesn't really have to stop for a lot of things that ordinarily you would expect. I hope you can deal with this question of enforcement, especially given the prospect of Idaho stops, because there's going to be a lot of unruly bikers. But thanks, let's move on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Phil.
Yes, I had a comment about the geography. In the picture, if you will notice, the shelter is quite a distance from the bus. And there are trees and grass and a light pole in the way, which might be difficult. But the worst part of it, if you look at the way the bus is parked at that island, the rear door.
Yes.
Is open, where as you step off, you're stepping into a hole between that white pole, semi-pole, and the actual floating bus stop.
Right.
And I can imagine that someone with low vision, foot drop, any type of difficulty would kill themselves. If you think about the warning on every rail car, beware of the gap. Well, that's it right there. And so I think it isn't obvious unless you see a bus pulled up to it, because that bus is not pulled up to the front of the island with the front door open and the rear door clear. But this particular bus looks like it's parked at an angle about middle of the island. And the disaster of getting out at their rear door is truly obvious. And also the distance from the shelter, if it's a rainy day, a snowy day, hot day, cold day, getting from the shelter to the island does not look easy or safe.
Steve,
there's also a trash barrel in front of the tree blocking you from the shelter.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Steve, this is Anu. Debbie has her hand up, and Steve also has his hand up.
I saw that.
Debbie, go ahead, please.
Thank you. It's Debbie Fisher. I've been wanting to ask this question for a long time, and this is the perfect time to ask it, which is it possible to have some kind of a stoplight, traffic light, something at those intersections where passengers who are particularly disembarking from the bus and need to cross to the sidewalk can have essentially a right of way that's signaled to cyclists. I just worry all the time about relying on the goodwill of drivers when people are in a hurry to get wherever they're going, and they do it in cars, and they do it in, and cyclists do it, and particularly low vision and blind passengers simply won't see them if they disembark and then have to cross to the sidewalk. So it seems to me that some sort of a signal device for the cyclists could make a huge difference, and it could provide also the audio tone for people who are walking.
I'd add that enforcement cameras might be ideal, although I doubt if we'll get them right away. Enforcement cameras that will catch unruly bikers or anyone else who violates these safeguards. Let's see, Steve, you had a question?
Yeah, it's interesting, Phil. It's interesting you pointed this out, because if we look closely, we see why this bus has stopped further back, and looks like there's a car or a little truck in front, and the driver decided to let the passengers off sooner rather than, you know, wait until it would move forward. You know, this is a reminder for drivers to recognize that people are also using the rear doors. And if the driver just barely made that sidewalk where it looks like the woman is going off. Also, it's interesting for the drivers, if you look at the kiosk, the woman is sitting there with her cell phone, and she might not even realize that a bus is here, because the bus has stopped, a bit of ways from the actual kiosk. So this is an interesting dimension we have here. Thank you.
I would add that as operators are being trained or retrained, something along these lines should be part of the training or retraining of operators. Anyone else? Okay, if not...
Chair Calabria, no one else has their hand up.
Okay, John or Megan, you want to go to the next slide?
Sure, so the next slide is passing over to Kevin Harrison to provide some project updates and talk a little bit more about that E of engineering, so some of the signage and markings to better communicate to users how they should be safely moving through the space. So Kevin, you want to take it away?
Yeah, sure. Good afternoon. My name is Kevin Harrison. I'm a transportation planner at DDOT, and I manage the planning of two of the projects we're going to discuss on Minnesota Avenue Southeast and Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast. For Minnesota Avenue Southeast, the project is from East Capitol Street to Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast. There is only one location where a shared stop or boarding island or bus stop island styled platform was required. And you can see the illustration on the right of the screen is the plans for that island, which is under construction right now. It's an intersection where we added wheelchair ramps upgraded the wheelchair ramps at the four corners of the intersection and added a crosswalk or a marked crosswalk on one side of the intersection. The island connects to one of the new high visibility crosswalks and provides a platform for people to board. It includes signage. It has an object marker sign at the front of the platform, which is that diagonally striped sign to improve visibility for drivers, that there's an object up ahead. There's a sign with a bicycle on it that says yield to pedestrians next to the protected bike lane. And then there's another sign that says a picture of a bicycle and then a stop sign, stop for pedestrians within crosswalks at the start of the crosswalk that people would use to access the island.
And Kevin, I think it says on the screen, but just to mention, this is at F Street South, the location.
Oh yeah, thank you. This is the one location where an island is needed, and it's at F Street Southeast.
Okay.
Go to the next slide. And then for Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast, the project that will be under construction this summer is from 2nd Street Southeast to 14th Street Southeast. And there are 10 shared bus stops that will be constructed as part of that project. There's a graphic on the screen that indicates some of the signage that will be included with these shared stops. Again, there's an object marker to let drivers know that there is a vertical object on the side of the road. And then there's another one of the signs that say bicyclists stop for pedestrians within crosswalk. There is also a sign that will be facing the sidewalk that says wait for bus on sidewalk. And that will be near the railing that divides the boarding platform from the sidewalk. There's a ramp that will go from the sidewalk grade up to the boarding platform grade, and a crosswalk going across the boarding platform, and then a detectable warning strip identifying where the bus should be boarded. There is a thermoplastic striping on the platform that has some lines where it'll be kind of double thickness and serve as a rumble strip for people on bicycles. And then pavement markings in thermoplastic that say stop for ped. On the approach to the crosswalk to give, you know, further indication that people on bicycles should stop for people crossing the platform to board the bus or alight the bus.
Will those green areas have a kind of rumble?
So the green markings that indicate where the path of travel is for people on bikes, those won't have much vertical, you shouldn't feel that too much on a bike, but where the black lines are, that will be thick white thermoplastic striping that bicyclists will feel and, you know, draw their attention to the striping and encourage them to slow down. We've used similar treatments like this at valet type locations where people are frequently walking across protected bike lanes, and that thermoplastic is used to give a warning to bicyclists that they should slow down.
Yes, go on.
Can you hear me? And that's all for me.
Megan?
Great. So the last slide here just says contact information. And we can put this into the chat too, but there's phone number 202-671-2376. And you feel free to leave a voicemail and then we'll give you a call back. We have our email address that goes to several team members, buspriority@bc.gov. So that's the best way to get in touch with us. That way, if someone's out of the office, you'll make sure to get the core team. And then our website and the project website. So we'll put those into the chat so that folks can access them. And we can pause there and see if there's any other comments. I've been taking notes and I appreciate the comments shared so far very much. So feel free to let us know if there's any additional, or we'll Kevin will be able to stay on until the end of the meeting in case there's any comments shared at the public comment period.
Megan, this is Anu. We have two hands raised, Steve Caffin and then Carol Parado Lopez. So Steve, go ahead.
You may have mentioned this. Are speed bumps or just slight bumps being considered in bicyclists' lanes as they approach the, you know, the shared stops or the islands, just as a slight trigger that that they need to heed up ahead?
Yeah, so that's what we've done with this project on the platforms for Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast. You know, bicycles have skinny tires and no suspension, so not as much vertical deflection is required to slow them down. And I think that the thermoplastic, I think the vertical deflection is about a quarter of an inch or so. And that's enough to alert bicyclists that they should slow down, and serves a similar purpose to a speed bump for cars.
These bicycle speed bumps do not now exist in any other location in the city?
They do. We've used them in valet pickup locations where people are frequently walking across a protected bike lane to access a taxi or, you know, to pick up their car. An example would be 15th Street Northwest near the on the block north of 8th Street near the White House. There is such an installation there.
But there aren't many.
No, there aren't. There aren't a whole lot. I'm not sure how many there are.
Is it envisioned that more will come?
I don't know. I think that that'll be part of the evaluation for these platforms to see how well they're working.
I would just add, Tina, if you have locations of interest, feel free to send them to us via email and we can share them with the bike team. Those are particularly helpful. Yeah, where there's the pedestrian crossings. I know they're also, I think, down by the Treasury Building on 15th Street Northwest. There's a crosswalk there at, I think, G Street. So feel free to send any suggestions. And I just also would add that the ramp up to the shared stop is also a way to slow down people on bikes, kind of like a speed bump, because if you know you're changing grade and you're going up, it slows you down as well. And then the narrowing, you can see that the green stripe on the platform is a little bit narrower than the green stripe just off the platform. It's narrowed by about a foot, and so that's another way to kind of visually, just like you would with a vehicle lane, reducing the width will slow down drivers of cars. It's another way to kind of visually signal to people on bikes that they need to go slowly. But you know, we're trying many different treatments. We're curious to see, you know, which are the most effective, what combination. So I think this is something that through that regional working group will continue to be refined. And we also want to make sure there's consistency for users of bus stops throughout the region. So I would anticipate that there may be, you know, iterations of these kinds of treatments in the future as we get that the regional bus stop guidelines updated so that we can ensure, you know, consistent legibility across the region, since people, you know, may be using bus stops in different jurisdictions.
Thank you. You did have a video. I don't know if you need to show it, how much time do we have, Anu?
Chair Kalabi, actually, we are running slightly behind schedule, and Carol does have her hand up.
Okay, Carol. Carol?
Thank you very much for the presentation. I wanted to point a couple of improvements that I have seen. I like the stop for pedestrians within crosswalk sign for the cyclists to notice that. And you have all the warnings about how you're going through a pedestrian zone, narrowing of the lane and all those. I also like that you have a sign that says wait for bus on the sidewalk. That's a good sign. I would like to see that in raised lettering and braille. One thing that we're missing here is some audible information that this is a different type of bus stop. And I guess we're gonna be working on that as we develop standards. I'm not sure what that striped area rectangle is. Is that just that's just a sign. They're next parallel to the stop for pedestrians during crosswalk, there's also some white and black striped sign that alerts you that you're entering a different zone, which is good.
The diagonal.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's for drivers, I think, also to make sure they don't run into the stop. The shared stop, so they're aware there's a you know, raised curb here.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for that feedback, Carol. Appreciate it. And agree on the raised the braille and raised text signage and audible. We're eager to get a regional standard on that so that we can make sure that whatever we put out is legible, and look forward to working together on that.
Thank you.
Well, we're now behind, but thank you, Megan. Once again, though, I would like to emphasize the need for some sort of enforcement measures, perhaps cameras, but I don't know how much they cost or how willing people are to try and put them everywhere. But camera enforcement, I think, would be ideal. Thank you very much, Megan. We really appreciate all the work you've put into this. And I know that you're sharing it with other cities, and God bless them too. Now, Anu, the next presentations.
Yes, Chair Kalabia. Now, next we have is the team from WMATA to talk about the blue and yellow line projects. So I would ask them to come off of mute and start the discussion. Mr. Hambury.
Well, I think we should start out with Tatiana.
I'm trying to see if she's.
Yeah, me too.
It may be
all right. Well,
I don't see her.
I'll get started, and when she is able to join us, she can add in additional details. So, the Potomac Yard Metro Station, you know, is being constructed, and they are getting ready to do the work that requires tying into the railroad, the existing railroad, both north and south of that station. That's going to require approximately 6 weeks of construction work, including building new interchanges, both north and south, as well as changes to the power control systems and the communication systems and the signaling systems and all sorts of systems. And as a result, They're going to be interfering with the interlockings that are just south of National Airport and south of the Braddock Road Station, near the Braddock Road Station. And so the conclusion, after much consternation, evaluation, assessment, and other, is that they're going to have to close the airport south of close the railroad south of National Airport, just as we did in 2019, in order to facilitate that construction work for the station. It is envisioned to require 6 weeks, beginning on September 10 and extending to October 22nd. And then the interfering work will be completed, and the station activation itself can continue and will open later in the year. Obviously, Metro intends to take advantage of the opportunity, and there are a lot of what are called piggyback projects that will be at all of the other stations while they're closed to get them into the best condition possible, so that we never have to go back to Alexandria, at least in the living memory of the mayor and most of our riders down there, who have grown quite finished with all of the interruptions that we've had to have there. And as a result, the Potomac Yard Station will open. To mitigate that, we have, and then parallel, starting at the same time, but continuing on for 8 months, is work on the bridge across the Potomac River, the Yellow Line. And so we have two projects that'll be concurrent for 6 weeks, and then one that will carry on. They require a combined service plan and then continuing supplements. So we'll talk about the project in two steps. One, the 6 weeks during the Potomac Yard shutdown. And specifically, Metro Bus will, or contractors will, have four main routes to replace the railroad. There will be a Yellow Line local that'll run from Huntington through Eisenhower, King Street, Braddock, and will terminate at Crystal City, similar to what we did in 2019, where the services can make the transfer to the Metro Rail. Then we'll have a Blue Line local that'll operate Franconia, Van Dorn, King, Braddock, and will end at National Airport to provide connectivity to the airport. But in recognition that the airport's relatively small, subject to traffic congestion, and not the best place to operate a big shuttle out of, we'll be running that at a frequency to match the demand, whereas the expectation is the Yellow Line local will provide most of the connectivity for riders south of National Airport. And then to complement those two locals, we'll also have express routes, one from Huntington that will go around the Beltway and use the HOT lane into Pentagon, and a second from Franconia that will similarly use the HOT lanes that will go into the Pentagon. They were very well-received and successful routes in 2019, and so we anticipate similar response, although the commuter traffic now is significantly less than it was then. There were about 35,000 riders at these stations in 2019. There are about 20,000 riders at these same stations today. And so the scale will hopefully will be a little more manageable and not quite so hectic, but still a significant number of riders and complexity. And then to complement the closure of the Yellow Bridge, we will have three shuttles that will be operated, one from the Pentagon across the river and up toward the area around Metro Center to help connect people that would be transferring from buses at Pentagon and then would have been relying on the Yellow Line to get to the area along Independence Avenue and 7th Street and near the archives. Then we'll have a route from the Crystal City Metro Station, Pentagon City Metro, over to L'Enfant Plaza, similarly to allow for those very short trips to be completed with as little disruption as possible. And then lastly, we'll have a third line, which will be similar to our former 11Y Metrobus route that runs from Mount Vernon all the way through Old Town Alexandria and ends up by the Farragut Square area in downtown. Again, that's proved to be popular in 2019. We anticipate that riders, particularly in the Old Town Alexandria area, will take advantage of that to get to locations in downtown. Those last three routes will be the ones that will continue for the whole 8 month disruption of the Yellow Bridge, and will continue after the end of the Potomac Yard closure. We'll stop there. That's the scenario of services. Of course, there's a big communication effort underway now. There will be customer service and station operations staff at every one of the stops along the way to assist customers. And as we get closer to the project, which is 9 weeks out, then there'll be an increased amount of information made available. And with that overview, I'll stop and take any questions.
Thank you, Jim.
Anu, is Tatiana here?
Chair Calabria, I do not see Tatiana, but I do see Neela Babu and Kelly Stahl. If you both or either one have anything to add, please come off of mute and share information with us. And afterwards, we do have at least one hand up by Dr. Posner. So Neela or Kelly?
Hi, this is Kelly. I'm working on the communications portion of this project, and we are working on a number of things. We've got a revised website in the works. There is information with all of the shuttle information that was just mentioned up there. We are doing working on signage. We've got additional fact sheets that are going to be coming up. We're working on a plan for a media buy for advertising, both digital and in traditional newspapers. So there's going to be a lot more information coming.
Babu?
Neela,
your colleague, Neela, does she have anything to add?
Yeah, I'm here with Fred Robertson, the Potomac Yard project manager. We don't have anything further to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Posner, would you like to go ahead and ask a question or make your comment now?
Please. Phil?
Dr. Posner, you're on mute. Unmute yourself, please.
I was just warming up to myself.
We figured.
Thank you. I was fortunate enough to get the full presentation last week at the RAC meeting. And one of the questions I asked there, which was answered, was, will all of this be incorporated in the trip planner and the fare calculator? And of course, the answer was no.
No, that's not correct. It will be. We're providing the schedules for all of the route services that will be available in Trip Planner.
Yes, no, I understand that. But the question that I asked, and the answer was similar to what you just said, and that was the speed with which this would happen. And the question for that is for the committee, and I will make a motion later, that because of the complexity of where people are going and the connection that they're going to make from the yellow and the blue and the buses, that eventually connect downtown and get onto the red and the orange and the blue. It will be very complex for people to figure out where they're going, particularly if they're a tourist or they don't travel that often. But the other thing is, for the fare calculator, knowing how much it's going to cost. And because the fare for Metro Access comes right off the fare calculator. And so I am going to make a motion later for the committee that during the period of this construction, that a flat fare be offered, calculated by WMATA at a sustainable level, but understandable for the ridership of both Metro Access and bus and rail. And since experimentally the weekend fares are flat fares of $2 and $4, and after 9:30, they're $2 and $4. And so using that as a basis, the concept of doing that for the entire period of these construction projects is something that we would request. And so I will make that motion later and then we'll put it up to the vote for the committee. But it's the old, you know, I'm always KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And the problem that we learned earlier, the fare calculator does not get updated that frequently. And so when there's, because in addition to all this, let's remember the 7,000 series cars and the time between trains on all the routes is going to be variable depending upon what's available at any given time. It seems that until this construction is completed and until the 7,000 series are back into use and we know what's going on, a sustainable flat fare might be the easiest way to go. And I've used my 3 minutes. So thank you so much.
We'll be back to you for the motion. But thank in the you. Meanwhile,
we can do that during the work set, you know, when we're planning on our work for the rest of the year. So I can make the motion then.
And I'll just point out that for all of the shuttle services that I described, there will be no fare. So we've done our share.
How do you like that, Phil?
Yes, that's fine. But you will be paying a fare when you get on the train and the first bus, and you'll be having it calculated when you get off the train or the final bus. So yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, I know you're free and accessible in between, and your buses will be great because you will have people to help the blind in the wheelchair and the mobility and the cognitively challenged, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Get people where they need to go. I'm sure that will work well. But knowing how much money to have on your card or in your pocket will be important.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else, especially from Northern Virginia? Is Doris here?
Dear Calabi, Doris is not connected yet.
Barbara, you have a lot of experience with Northern Virginia. Do you have any comments or questions? Barbara Millville.
Hi, Tino. This is Barbara. I haven't really thought about this until you called on me. However, I think it's a lot for the passengers, riders to handle, given the absence of the 7,000 series cars, to now ask them to pay the typical fare, and they have to now get on the shuttle buses, which of course are free, but it's just, again, additional time. And I'm just rather concerned about that. I'm wondering what is Metro's plan for actually getting these riders to come back to Metro and stay, because right now there are some very good reasons for them to do otherwise.
Jim,
Well, that, of course, is a challenge on a daily basis. Our goal through the shuttle period is not to lose any riders and to give everybody the best possible way to continue their commutes or their travel, the discretionary travel, through using the system. And hopefully once the Potomac Yard closure is done, the Blue Line will become the main way between Virginia and the district. Blue will operate out of Franconia and out of Huntington through Roslyn and into the city, similar to the way that Yellow served that connection 2 winters ago when we had a project at Arlington Cemetery for platform repairs. That proved to work pretty well. With luck, we will have more trains and we'll be able to operate more frequency along that blue. We think that there will be enough capacity for the riders and that are both presently using the service as well as are projected to be using that service in 3 or 6 months. We recognize that it will be disruptive, but this is a $340 million station project. Fred can correct me if I'm wrong, but this was a very important project for the city of Alexandria. And it's unfortunate that this is necessary in order to take advantage of that investment.
This is, I know, Neela, if you have any additional information to add for the Potomac Yard project, please come off of mute and, you know, share information.
Hi, Anu. I don't think we have anything additional to share at this time. Thank you.
Okay.
Anu, of our new members, and I don't recall all their names, some must be from Northern Virginia. Can we make sure that they have a chance to comment? Are they here even?
Tino, this is Phil, if I can jump in for a moment.
Sure.
Doris had already emailed us about some of her concerns, but not real concerns, but requests that the new bays that are going to come in the new turnabouts in Northern Virginia have sufficient markings and zonings and directions so that people can find which bus they are going to. At which bus bay? She was talking about the change in the bus bays. And so that's the major thing. And it's a request.
And those were projects that aren't related to this particular effort, which I think we have on the agenda later on at East Falls and Franconia. The good news I didn't get a chance to mention is, unlike 2019, where we had to construct temporary bus facilities away from the regular stops because of the need to access those stations, this time we won't be doing that. So the buses will be where they are supposed to be. We'll just have the extra shuttles coming through those stations in the existing bus loops. And so that should make things a whole lot simpler and easier to navigate.
Welcome to Sandy Newsel, one of our newest members. Sandy, you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I have a comment that in the 2019, I guess, blue and yellow line from National Airport South, I was using the metro to commute to King Street, Alexandria. And I'll have to say that it sounded far more intimidating than it turned out to be. And I found the metro staff to be very helpful. So, you know, the first one or two times through the system, getting a shuttle bus, it was a little daunting, but worked pretty smoothly. And I'm optimistic that even though it sounds very challenging, people can, with assistance, you know, use these alternate shuttle connections and alternate routes. You know, if they have a a route they're used to taking, and they have a, you know, a departure point and an arrival point that they're aiming at. There should be a solution. And once they figure that out, it should be workable.
Well, thank you for that. We learned a lot of lessons in 2019 that hopefully we have applied the solutions. And one great blessing is that King Street Station is no longer under construction. So we're able to actually use the bus loop and take advantage of that very nice facility that the city has paid for.
One other thing I wanted to point out on that topic are we are working on having street teams there. They are going to be there for 2 weeks prior, as well as the entire shutdown for the 6 weeks. So as well as once the stations reopen south of National, they'll also be around for a couple of weeks to help folks with those three remaining shuttles. So people will not be left to their own devices or to figure it out on their own. There will be assistance there in multi-language as well. So
yeah, at the King Street stop, we're looking to have one Metro person for every customer. Just teasing, but there will be some times when it'll feel like that.
And multi-language includes ASL, I am assuming.
I will defer to Kelly on that, but I know they are multilingual.
I do know Spanish and English, and I would have to look into the ASL.
Thank you. Neela, do you want to add anything?
Neela? Sure, Calabria, this is there are no further hands up.
Oh, yes, this is Barbara. I may say a couple other words.
Sure.
This brings up a good point. I don't know if you guys could get the ASL folks there, but I'm remembering other years there was discussion about whiteboards, and that may be a good substitute here for communication purposes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, and we're also dealing with blind, deaf individuals.
Yes.
So pre-printed Braille cards or pre-printed elevated cards would be really helpful. Something as simple as take my hand, I will lead you.
And also,
excuse me, would you like to take my hand? Would be better.
Okay. Jim or Kelly or Neela, the assistants from WMATA that will be on there, will they have whiteboards?
Yeah, we'll have some form of that communication, whether it be whiteboards or tablets available. But I did take note of your suggestion about the pre-printed cards, and we'll work with Kelly and team to figure out how we can make that happen.
Okay. Any other comments or questions of Jim or Kelly or Neela? If not, where are we on the scheduled agenda?
So Chair Calabria, we're close to the schedule, and actually Mr. Hamry is up next also to talk about East Falls Church Bus Loop Extension. Mr. Hamry, and if Ms. Catherine Jones is available.
Yeah, actually, I think there's two topics, East Falls Church and Franconia.
Yes.
I'll be happy to talk to Franconia, but I invited a colleague to join us, Yasmin Dumi, from our land group, to talk about the East Falls Church process. Yasmin, are you on?
Is she here?
Thought I saw her name earlier.
I don't see her.
All right. No, well, I'll just plow forward then. And Catherine is our senior transportation planner in the Strategic Service and Facility Planning Group of Bus Planning. And she's been involved in both of these projects in the review process. And so she's here as a a technical subject matter expert and familiar with the technical details. I note also that Charlie Dingboom is monitoring. His staff has also been involved in these discussions. East Falls Church has a public hearing coming up to talk about an expansion of the East Falls Church bus loop, which is an Arlington County sponsored project. Years ago, they got a grant and have been working to fulfill the requirements. East Falls Church, which started out, you know, as a sleepy little suburban station, has grown as a transit hub with Metrobus, Arlington Transit, and Connector all operating from that facility. It's the last common transfer between the orange and the silver. And as a result, the four bus bays that were part of the original design are just oversubscribed, and at times it becomes dysfunctional because of the limited capacity. So the idea is basically to stretch the loop out and add two and potentially three more stops within the, there Yasmin is on the call. I guess she just needs to unmute.
Heather, can you hear me?
Take over. No, yes. We can.
Yeah, sorry about that. I actually dropped off, so I missed what the question was, and I can totally answer it.
All right. Well, we're just starting out by describing the East Falls Church project. And so I was just saying that the general concept is to add two more bays or three more bays to the existing loop.
Yeah.
Just extending it into the parking area. And that would give us, and it's a similar design, and that would give us a greater capacity and help fulfill its role in the transit network that is evolving. And so, Yasmin, right. If you'd like to add anything else, please.
Sure. So there are three main, purposes of the project, one of which, what Jim had just mentioned, that we are increasing the bus loop capacity by three bays. The other two points to make are, and especially it will be relevant to this group here, we're relocating the ADA parking to be in closer to the bus bays. Right now, I think, taking a look at a map, they are in the, almost in the center-ish of one of the areas of parking on the north lot, and we'll be relocating them so that they're directly adjacent to the new bus bays. There will be 11 accessible parking spaces. And through our studies, we've concluded that the amount of parking that we're providing in the new configuration, not just ADA, but the total parking spaces, it retains sufficient capacity to accommodate the growth. And Catherine just made a good point. So bringing the ADA spaces closer to the bus bays also brings it closer to the station entrance. The third purpose of the project was to improve pedestrian infrastructure in general. So the entrance to the bus bay today is over 150 feet or around 150 feet, the crossing to actually get from one part of the sidewalk across the bus bay entrance over to the other side to get closer to the station. It's 150 feet. And we are reducing it down to about 35 feet would be the crosswalk. And therefore, tightening that intersection, tightening that pedestrian crossing by the bus bay is a much safer condition. So we don't have people walking 150 feet without any protection. And that's what we have.
Yasmin, this is Carol Lopez. I'd also like you to please note, or if you'd like me to do so, we're also adding reserved accessible parking spaces at this location during this construction process. And thank you.
And thank I would you, point out the county is also going to upgrade the traffic signal management system there that dates back into the early 90s, and that should improve the flow of buses in and out of the station as part of this same project. But what makes this immediately relevant is the call for comments, and then there's a public hearing to modify the regional transit master plan. So could you speak to that process as well, Yasmin?
Sure. So on the 21st of July, we'll be holding a WMATA compact public hearing. The information for this hearing is completely virtual. It's on WMATA.com/plans-and-projects. This is a project that we're working in coordination with Arlington County. I'll actually be at the East Falls Church Metro Station on Wednesday. We'll be there 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. if anyone happens to be in the area. We'll have a pop-up event to answer any questions at the station. The comments for the hearing can be submitted online. They can also be submitted by email. And if you'd like, you can also submit by mail. Comments for the project and the hearing that we'll be giving on the 21st of July are due August 1st, Monday, August 1st. And I think that is, actually, let me give a little bit more of a rundown. The close of the public comment period will be August 1st. By mid-August, we'll post a draft staff report. So that's about 2 weeks from when our presentation, when the public hearing occurs, we'll post a staff report and we'll receive public comments again. And so the close of the second public comment period will be at the end of August. And then by October, we would have had, we will have the final staff report presented to the Metro Board of Directors for approval to be incorporated in the mass transit plan. So a lot of stuff going on, but the next couple of weeks is critical if you want to provide comments.
One I have is relates to the WayMap folks that at a recent meeting, they told us that they expect to have 25 stations covered for WayMapping by September or in September. Do you know if any of the stations that you've been talking about will be included in the 25 that are being WayMapped by our new contractors?
Go ahead, Carol. I'm going to have to check. I can look at it in a few minutes and check back and let you know.
Okay. Yeah, I would be surprised if East Falls Church is on that priority list. But of course, the changes that Yasmin's talking about are years in the future, not by September.
Right.
Chair Calabia, this is Barbara Melville has her hand up. Barbara, go ahead, please.
Sure. Yes, Barbara.
Thank you. This is Barbara. And I live a few stops away from there, so I go there from time to time. I'm not super familiar with that parking area. My questions pertain to the ADA parking. Approximately how many feet walk is it currently and then proposed? And also, I am wondering if the traffic signal is planned to be an audible pedestrian signal. And finally, might it be possible to just extend the project out a little bit to the walkway, which leads to the station entrance? The lighting along that stretch is a little on the dim side. And then also when it goes over to the other side, that smaller, I guess what I will call drop off area on the other side of the station. So those kind of things are what I'm particularly concerned about at this point.
So I can answer the traffic signal question. Yes, it'll be the audible signal standard that is used in Arlington.
Okay, and we don't want any birds. We want like the modern one.
Can't help you there. Dr. Posner will have to take on the county about what sounds they use.
But oh, he does it with the car horns.
There will be sounds. Maybe Yasmin can, are you familiar with the travel distance from the
ADA spots? I can estimate it right now, but I don't want to.
I'm just an approximation. It would be
fine. Yeah. So what I can tell you, even though I cannot, okay. So I'm trying to calculate it right now. I think we're looking at around maybe 200 feet from the station, but I think one of the most important things that has changed is previously when you park in an ADA space, you'd have to cross traffic to get to the station and to get to the bus bays. But now the configuration has it such that the ADA bays are directly adjacent to sidewalk. So there's no longer a need to cross traffic or any of the travel lanes, which is a much safer condition. You also mentioned lighting. Lighting will also be upgraded. I don't have too many details on that specifically because Arlington County's design is involved there. But what I will say is to make sure your comments are addressed and responded to, I highly recommend that you provide these comments on our website. You can also email, I'll put the email in, it's speak@WMATA.com. If you wanted to provide comments directly to us, or we have that compact public hearing, but I would highly recommend that you provide comments. That way we can be able to address your comments, especially the one that you had made about the audible.
So, yeah, I was wondering, so you're saying that the that walkway that I'm saying is dimly lit, that is Arlington County's responsibility as a roadway?
Yeah, you're specifically talking about the pathway under the I-66.
Correct.
Bridges, and that has mixed pedigree of ownership. And so in your comments, you should specify that you're talking about that area under the freeway.
Well, that whole, you know, there's like, you could tack on either side of that segment that we're talking about.
And I think what Yasmin's saying is Arlington County can design streetscape lighting improvements along Sycamore Street, but the area under the freeway is actually VDOT and WMATA and complex. And so your message could get amplified through this process to make sure that that does in fact happen.
Oh, yes. I've been having conversations with them about the APSs. Good. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't get the date that you were going to be present at the station.
Yeah, it's actually Wednesday between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. There will be a pop-up event with Arlington County and a couple of us from WMATA.
What's the date, please?
Wednesday the 13th.
After tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Where will you be exactly? I'm hoping to come is why I'm asking for all these finite details.
I actually do not know. I planned on showing up and trying to figure it out. I'm assuming we're in the north lot. Well, we will be in the north lot for sure. And that's the lot with the bus bays. Other than that, I do not have the precise details.
I'm just wondering how to locate you, because you don't know who I am either.
Well, we do have your picture, but in any event, can you inform?
I'm asking a station manager help. I mean, could Yasmin, will you be informing the station managers that you're there?
Yes.
And come to the bus bay and.
Is there a bus manager at those bus bays?
No.
Okay. I did look up the way map question, Tino. Yes. East Falls Church is in that group.
Oh, good.
We're having it done by September or in September?
Yes.
Great. Thank you for looking it up. Thank you. Sure. Are there any other comments or questions?
Chair,
yes.
Okay, I think somebody was about to make some comments. Go ahead.
Sorry, just wanted to let everyone know that in the chat, we've pasted the link that'll give more information about the East Falls Church expansion. And Catherine also added just a reminder of the Wednesday, July 13th, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. pop-up event.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Yasmin. And
yeah, I would encourage everyone to come who's interested in that, whether they use that station a little bit or a lot. Really, it would be probably more important to have people there who are not familiar with that station, because if we are familiar with the station, we can kind of cheat and memorize things, and that's not really what you're looking for here.
Good point.
And I'm hoping that Doris will, or maybe Marcy or somebody from the Independent Living Center will be able to be present as well.
Yeah, and that'll give you a chance to get the lay of the land, but also don't forget there is that public hearing on the 21st, I think, that you can submit your written comments and other suggestions.
Barbara,
thank you for informing us.
Were you suggesting Marcy? Is she in?
Yes, I was volunteering Marcy.
Yes, good. Thank you. Marcy, I hope you got that. Any others from Northern Virginia?
This is Sandy. I apologize. I'll be out of town until July 24th. So the public hearing will have come and gone, but I can go take a look and possibly weigh in on the second round of comments.
You also will have time to provide comments until August 1st.
Right. That's what I'm suggesting.
Okay.
I can. Great. I'll try.
Please. And that's a virtual hearing too, Sandy.
Did you hear that, Sandy?
No, I did not understand that.
Oh, this is Barbara. It's a virtual hearing, so you can participate from your smartphone if you desire.
Oh, on the 21st.
Yes.
Good point. Okay. So if Anu is sending around the information about that, perhaps, then yes, I could participate on the 21st, but I will not have seen the station except for once about 3 years ago. So I really should go visit the station again when I get back in town.
If you look at the information, this is Barbara. If you look at the information that I sent out, you follow those links, there's actually design maps and plans there. If you like to look at those.
I can look at those. I would not be able to sense the lighting issue clearly, but yeah. Okay, I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Anu. For the convenience of everyone, I know Barbara had shared email. Even before that, I had sent out an email about the public hearings. I would send another detailed email to all the members giving information about the public hearing. So do look out for my email tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Especially people from Northern Virginia.
I have one. This is Carol Lopez. I have one additional question, Yasmin. Are you going to leave behind any graphics or information at the station after you leave on Wednesday?
Yes.
Okay, because if people are able to come afterwards and they're visual, they could refer to what they're planning on doing while they're at the station.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You have graphics now, Yasmin, that can be shared?
Yep, it's at the link that I posted in the chat. It's WMATA.com/plans-and-projects, and you can click on the East Falls Church link. What I posted in the chat is the full link.
Okay. Anything else, Phil? Or sorry that Doris isn't here. If not, all thanks to Jim and his colleagues for the presentations on those two projects. Thank you.
Well, we've got one more public hearing that you could attend if you want to be a participant, and that's about the Franconia Springfield project. I believe the hearing's actually scheduled for tomorrow. And so I was going to ask Catherine Jones to describe a little bit about what's being advertised there. This is
a long-lived
project that is hoping to come to fruition.
Catherine?
Yes. Please. Hello, I'm Catherine Jones. I work with WMATA, and
I'll be speaking to the Frontier Drive Extension and Braided Ramps project that is actually going to have a public hearing tomorrow, hosted virtually by Fairfax County. The project has, it's been going on for a really long time. I think it started maybe like before the pandemic. Our land department is coordinating for WMATA, but for the most part, there are going to be some access improvements to the Franconia Springfield Metro Station entrance. It's also a new road that will access the same existing access road as WMATA's buses access now. But that new road is going to go down to Dewisdale Road to give access to a new building that will be built. And I'm not sure if it's like in the process of being built today, but it is definitely a new access road, which caused us to have to do some changes to the Franconia Springfield Metro Station. Some of the changes to the station access also includes the new intersection that will include those braided ramps a reconfigured street network outside and around the metro station area. The changes to bus facilities include 3 new bus bays, and because there's not going to be any recirculation for buses on site, there is also plans for a future bus facility layover lot to the west of the station, to the northwest of the station. I think that's about all I have, other than the virtual public hearing being held by the county tomorrow at 7 o'clock p.m.
And I see Yasmin put a link in the comments so you can access that. This is primarily about road management and traffic flows, and really doesn't impact pedestrian the ability of bus customers to get to the rail station or parking customers getting into the rail station. But it is, supporting development in the old GSA warehouse site, and hopefully VDOT will be able to move forward on it.
Jim, those are not, this is Carol Lopez. Those are not primarily metro buses, correct? The ones that are being added.
We no longer have scheduled bus service at Franconia. It's now all local services are provided by Connector. PRTC operates into the facility with their connection, the Metro Connector to Prince William County. And then there are
Omnibus.
Yeah, that is Omnibus, the PRTC. Okay. I believe there is a Greyhound stop, and there's several shuttles that go in and out of there. But it's a large, let's see, when we expanded it in 2015, we added 3 bays. I believe it right now it's got 11 bus stops. And so it's a fairly, major transfer center for that South County area of Fairfax and connecting to Prince William.
One thing I wanted to note about this public hearing that's tomorrow. So it's hosted by VDOT. And as a result, if you go on the same website, WMATA.com/plans-and-projects, scroll down to Frontier Drive, it'll take you to a page similar to the East Falls Church one. The difference here is it'll ask you to register on VDOT's website, which is an external website. It'll take you to a VDOT page. It'll also be live streamed from VDOT's website. You can call in without registering. The phone number is listed on the WMATA page as well as the VDOT page. And there's also a phone number for East Falls Church as well. But just so you know, in case you're wondering why the two formats are a little bit different in terms of the platforms that you'll be participating in the hearing, I believe the East Falls Church one may be on Zoom, and the VDOT one is on their website. It's due to our partnerships with the different counties. And ASL interpretation will be provided.
Thank you. Good addition of information.
Thanks.
So we'll take any questions. Otherwise, thank you for the opportunity to brief out on these two projects.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to have you here and your colleagues. Any
last... A great job, Jim and team.
Well, thank you. Okay.
Any other last comments for Jim and his team? Thank you. If not, where do we stand on the agenda, Anu, and the time?
So Chair Calabia, the next topic is work plan for the bus and rail subcommittee. Before we begin that, I would just ask if anybody has any public comments. Perhaps we can do public comments before we do the work plan, and then we can just continue with the work plan, if you would.
Sure.
Agree. Any members of the public, if you have any public comments, please let us know. I do know that Chair Dr. Posner wanted to make public comments. Dr. Posner, would you like to go ahead and make your comment now?
Yes, do.
Yes, thank you. No, I've already made it. It was about the fair and the complex work schedule, and I can do that when we're doing our work plan.
Okay. All right. So it seems like there are no public comments, Chair Calabia.
I think I sent you a message that I have a comment.
Okay, yes, I just got it. Thank you. Go ahead, Steve.
Okay, thanks. This will be quick, Tino. I've been back riding the rails after a while, and after some time, and while it may be quiet for the residents, it was pretty busy for the tourists. And I noticed a couple things I just want to bring up. One is that many of the stations now have these digital monitors. You may have seen them, and they are very classy. They're usually five or six on the station, and they're spread out from the escalators to the center. The system map, the map of the system, is in the center. It's the center monitor. And I know myself, I and other people usually look for the maps when they're coming down the escalator, as opposed to wondering where they might be when they're actually in the center. So my suggestion would be to consider moving the digital maps to be next to the escalators. In other words, having two, one at each of the escalators, or one depending upon the station, and not in the center where many people don't even know they're there. And the second thing actually concerns Metro Rail again. We don't have a system map in the center for the center door. Rather, we actually have two emergency signs and no system map. And I noticed when the trains are pretty full, particularly people who don't know the system, they're looking for a system map, and I noticed some families pushing from the center to the side to get to that map. So I know the newer cars have digital maps, but for the cars that we currently have operating, I suggest we put system maps in the center and remove one of the emergency pieces of information, which we have there already. Okay. One last thing. You know the Metro Center station, the one for the blue, orange, and silver line is still quite dark. And also the signage that is how to get to particularly transferring to the red line still hasn't been updated. You know, once the silver line is extended, especially to Dulles, we're going to have a lot of people who don't know how to transfer, and it may be wise to take a look at that before that happens. Thank you.
Steve, since we don't meet again until September, do you want to make one or two or three motions on what you've just said, or at least one motion?
Well, you know, let me just send them as public comments, because they're things which are technical, and I'm not the best judge of whether they're feasible or not. Okay, Tino, would that be all right?
Sure. Yeah. All yeah.
Right. Sure.
No, by the way, yes. The minutes have yet to be approved of last month.
Okay, sure. So we can go through the approval of minutes from last month, and then rest of the time we can take for the work plan.
Okay. As I go through the minutes, I'll itemize things that I thought would be looked into for us. We had Michael Haas, the interim officer there. And during that discussion, Phil mentioned the idea of a mass car. And I think that Christian was going to look at it. I don't know if Christian is on with us. I also asked Christian if he could look into the status of the UVC germicidal filters, especially regarding the policy that was going to be on the buses, what the status is of that. Maybe it is.
I need to follow up on those issues. I think Carol responded to the filters, but I'll double check on that, but I still have to follow up on some of the requests. I got your emails. A lot's been happening, but believe me, I've got them and I'm gonna be following up.
Okay. Especially regarding the status of the mass cars that Phil had brought up. Phil also mentioned air marshals for Metro, and recently apparently the Metro police have been issued body cameras, which are meant to allow for or enable them to have more transparency in the work that they do. And connected to that is the question of fare evasion, which has been an eternal question since I joined. Of course, it's been hampered by the fact that the District of Columbia does not allow District of Columbia police to help in enforcing or to do something about fare evasions. We also talked about, the way mapping, which will have 25 stations complete in September. And we dealt with floating bus stops. So I think that was basically it. And given that, you all have had a chance to review the minutes of May for, I'm sorry, the minutes of June for a couple of weeks. I call now for a motion to accept the minutes.
Oh, I so move, Tino.
Second, anyone, please?
Second, Darnese.
Okay, thank you, Darnese. Not hearing any objections, the June 13th minutes are adopted.
I just have a question real quick.
Oh, sure. Who is it?
This is Rico speaking. So I would like to see, just in regards to what we were talking about with DC Metro Police, I would like to see what happens in terms of Black men lives. I'm just curious as to what kind of training the Metro Police Station officers have in regards to this.
In regards specifically to what again?
Because there's been terrible discrimination of cops killing Black men 6 times more than others, and this is a huge concern of mine And I'm just wondering what kind of training police have, and also what they have with disabled individuals, whether people are deaf or have intellectual disabilities. This is a huge concern of mine that police officers don't have this training, and these types of people are killed at a higher percentage than others. And I'm just wondering if anyone has that information about the training that police officers do receive in the metro area.
I don't know if anyone can respond at the moment, but Carol or Christian, could you look into that and tell us in September?
Tina, we do have a motion on the floor, so I think we need to get rid of that.
Oh, I thought we accepted it. Okay.
Yes.
The motion is, again?
To accept the minutes.
Oh, no, I thought we approved that. Well, anyway, I don't hear any objections to accepting the minutes, so the minutes are adopted.
Thank you.
Next, with respect to the training for police in regards to possible discrimination or how they treat people with disabilities, could you, Carol, or Christian?
Mr. Chair, if I might make a suggestion, there is a new chief of police that has just taken over the system. And I would suggest that we invite him to come meet with the committee.
Okay.
Discuss training.
Okay. We don't have to take a motion for that, but could you note anew that we would like to have the new police chief with us in the next term?
Starting? Sure. Yes,
and that would be for the full committee. Meet with the full aides.
When do you think that they could be attending the next committee meeting?
This is Anu. Since we don't have any meetings in August, we would put in the request that we would extend the invitation to them. Based on the availability, we will have them on the agenda. The earliest would be September, but cannot guarantee that it will be September. We will invite them though. And Debbie, I see you have your hand raised. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that I've asked this question in the past and I was given explicit information as to the extensive training that is provided to officers and station managers, specifically addressing people with developmental disabilities, intellectual disabilities, psychiatric disabilities.
And bus operators.
And bus operators, correct. So across the board, I've been reassured that should not preclude inviting the new police chief to give a report, because I want to make sure that that person is also aware, but I've been told training does take place.
I think Dr. B has some responsibilities in this regard. She was on earlier. Is she still on? Dr. B? No.
Afternoon. Oh, afternoon, yeah. Everyone. How are you all doing today?
Okay, fine. But Dr. B, could you help with Debbie's question?
Our office hasn't provided training through the pandemic. I was providing training for access services for rail, bus, and our armed force services, police officers, when I was in the same role that Anu was in. And I believe after me, it was David Schaefer, who continues to provide that training and service to that team. So my information would definitely be out of date, but I'm sure the new police chief will be able to tell you the type of training and information that they're giving their officers now. Thanks.
That's with respect to the Metro Police, but how about the station managers and the bus operators?
Well, again, you know, this is.
I'm sorry, this is Carol Lopez. ADAP provides sensitivity training to bus operators, particularly when bus operators have not have broken some of the WMATA rules, et cetera, and we have been providing that information. Anu in particular has been doing that.
Well, I guess...
Okay, well, this is Rico. Thank you again for hearing my concern. I'm really excited for the opportunity for the police chief to attend one of our committee meetings, and we can talk about what I've been seeing happening in the community, because it's really discouraging of seeing the crimes against Black men and women. And I would really love to know what training is taking place to, like I know last week, there was something that took place in Ohio that I saw that was absolutely very infuriating, and that is still a concern of mine. So again, I have a lot of questions for the new police chief of their training expectations, and I think it would open up a great opportunity to have this conversation with them.
Regarding how the Metro Police carry out their duties within the stations, I recall Phil mentioning that some systems have used a cadre of ambassadors. These are unarmed, but they're hired by the local system, and they also provide help for example, someone who might be homeless and obstructive in the...
Do you know if those ambassadors wear body cams, or are they just like private citizens?
Some of them, well, they're not private citizens. They're hired by the transit system, and they do carry, intercom phones to talk to one another or to the local Metro Police. I don't think that they have a body camera, but we can find that out, or somebody can inform us of that. It is now 5:57. Let's see, where are we now, Anu? I'm sorry.
Well, thank you for hearing my concerns.
Yes.
Thank you, Rico. Chair Calabria, this is Anu. So with respect to the work plan of Bus and Rail Subcommittee, since we do not have sufficient time today during the meeting, my recommendation would be for the committee to correspond via email. And if there is a list of topics of interest to be discussed, that could be shared with me. That I would appreciate that.
Okay. And
Dr. Posner just raised his hand.
Right. Yes, I'd like to take 1 minute of the three to make my motion.
Sure.
I would move that, based upon the complicated service changes going on during the Yellow Line construction and the difficulty in providing full vehicle numbers for the 7,000 series cars, that we simplify travel for the passengers by creating a sustainable flat fare for bus, rail, and metro access during the period of the Yellow Line construction going on between October and May. And this flat fare would stay in place until 7,000 cars would fill the full requirement of the fleet and service were back to normal.
Would the incoming GM be able to handle that as early as he's only coming on at the end of the month, And I don't know that we have a chief operating officer any longer.
We need a second in order to have a discussion.
I second.
Thank you. And that can only be done by the board.
Okay.
And so, and since we advise the board, that motion would go to the board for their action. And the minute the action, the board decides to implement the fat fare for bus, rail, and metro access 24/7, during a time that there are insufficient 7,000 cars and there is major construction going on the yellow line, they can implement that.
Can that be incorporated in the AAC's chair letter to the board?
I plan on not only doing that, but verbally telling them that when
okay,
the
good.
Report is given. Yes.
Let's formalize the motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you. Hearing no objections, the motion which Phil has just made is adopted. Thank you very much, Phil.
And thank you.
We could include that in the letter to the new GM and the board. That'd be great.
Thank you.
We're unfortunately over time, but any last things that ought to be taken up? We're a minute over time. Yes, Darnese, yes, quick.
I was just gonna say have a good week, everybody.
Okay. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to Anu, and look forward to, by the way, don't forget, spread the word that this is Disability Pride Month, and I will see you and all the rest in September. Thank you very much. Thank you, Anu.
Have a great summer, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah.